Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks a route tree is something he'd like to pee on. I feel like I've used that one before. Dominique, you listen to this podcast. You are a super fan and co-host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Have I used that one before? I need you to start keeping track of them.
Well, I snickered, so I don't think I've heard it before. It made me laugh. It was new to me, and I'm not good at keeping track of things, because as we noticed before, I think it was a couple weeks ago when Mike was on, I didn't realize that I had been on as many times as I had. I thought I was only on like three times, but we're creeping up on like double digits soon.
To be a super fan of the show, kind of like how George R. R. Martin has Game of Thrones fans who keep him on track, you know, and then they're very angry when he goes on vacation because it means he's not finishing the books. I don't know if you know about that. There's a great
article. Oh yeah, I do. I will be a Mina Kimes super fan and historian. I'm going to start up a Reddit and get it going. And I'm sure the person who will like that the least is you after a while.
Oh man. Yeah, like a subreddit, and you can be the moderator and just keep track for continuity purposes. You know, like if I like say a take that contradicts an earlier take, that's what want.
And we'll flip out. We will flip out as a Mina Kimes Show hive if you do not have a Lenny question. Cause that is, I feel like that is the thing that we identify the most with, is like if you chicken out and you don't ask that question at the end, we don't play that.
He asked Adam Schefter. People are still mad about him not getting a question in with Lewis Riddick. I still get grief about that.
You deserve it. You deserve
it. My dog who speaks in my own voice. Well, unlike George R. R. Martin, we do not take vacation here on the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. We forge on into the off season. We are halfway through the divisions, and I chose this one for you, Dominique, because we're not going to talk about the story. We have to be quiet about it, but you might be working on a story involving someone in this division. So I was hoping you might have some extra familiarity with the division, with one of the teams. It'd be fun for people to listen to the podcast and try to guess who the player is based on how you talk about the different teams. I wonder if they'll be able to.
I was thinking about that before.
Well, it's AFC South.
Because you are always like, it's top secret with you because you're like a real journalist and I'm trying to become a journalist. So I'm not as tight lipped. I would share it on the podcast, but I'm not going to because it would offend your journalistic sensibilities.
Interesting. So it is the AFC South. And Dominique is, of course, working on a story about Texans left tackle Julian Davenport. No, I'm just kidding.
Come on, Mina. You spilled my left tackle.
You guys can try to guess. Dominique, I think this is an interesting division. As I've gone through the divisions, at the very beginning, I've kind of thought through the order of things, right? Like, is there one favorite? Are there two favorites? We just did the NFC North. I said to Adam, and he agreed, we felt like kind of three teams really could take it. I think this division, maybe more than any other division in the NFL, is wide open.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I mean, doesn't it always come down to the quarterback? We're going to do a whole long podcast, and at the end, you're probably going to ask me who I'm going to pick, and I'm going to ask you the same thing, and my feeling is we're probably going to pick the same team in part because they have the best quarterback, right? Is that where we're going to end up? It's going to be fun getting there. It'll be a fun journey full of information and chuckles. However, if we had to put our money on somebody, we're putting our money on the best quarterback in the division.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, okay, so obviously, he is talking about Nick Foles. No, I'm just kidding. It's Andrew Luck. But the interesting thing is, I think there's two teams that are pretty, they're set at quarterback in Houston and Indianapolis. Foles has incredible variance. We've seen him play like the best quarterback in the NFL at times, and we'll get to what that takes and why that may or may not happen with Jacksonville. And then Marcus Mariota, who obviously is even higher variance game to game. So
he's
there's great
get
potential.
Benched for Tannehill at some point this season.
Or injured, and Tannehill will come in. Yeah. Is more likely scenario. Wow. And play just as well, probably. Which was a great pickup for them. But I just think there's great potential for randomness in this division. But you know what? Let's start with the Colts, because I think you're right. Even setting aside the quarterback issue, they are the prohibitive favorite, right? I'm sure I don't have the odds in front of me. But, you know, having been sort of the hipster favorite last year towards the second half of the season, they're a very balanced team, just pulling up DVOA, they finished 10th in offense, 10th in defense. Okay. Their Pythagorean wins was actually 10.3, which is more than they finished with, which usually bodes well for improvement. So everyone's really hot on the Colts. Let's poke some holes in it. Let's start. We're looking at the Colts, Dominique.
Okay.
What makes you nervous about the Colts?
So first, coming off of all this NBA free agency, I know this is a bit of a reach, but the Colts feel like the Celtics did a couple years ago.
Ooh, set up I love this take.
They're set up for the long distance team, and they're also set up for the win now. And that's something that just normally doesn't work in professional sports. Now, there's not as much departure in football, especially because of franchise tag, departure of players and free agency that aggressive because of franchise tag, and quarterbacks normally don't get to free agency. But that can happen. It does happen where you're like, oh, this is the team of the future. And then a couple of things here, a couple of things there, and they're out of it. So I do think that while Colts fans should feel pretty good now, they should not be like completely on cloud nine, especially coming off of Andrew Luck's injury. So they know what it's like to go from feeling like you have your future sealed up to then feeling like you might be in rebuild mode. So I think that is concerning. I also think that I don't love their defense, and I thought I was going to love their defense. But when I was watching more and looking at their stats, and defense, as you know, is one of the things that doesn't always carry over season to season. Like if you have a good defense, it's not guaranteed that your defense is going to repeat the following season. I think it's more consistent that your offense will be as good in the following season. But I don't love their defense in part because they play in an inordinate amount of zone. And in the modern NFL, I don't think that you can survive without being able to lock up and play man-to-man to combat the RPOs.
I love those takes. I love them. And I love them because they're all interrelated in some ways.
26% man-to-man. The league average is 43%, and they play man-to-man 26% of the time. You can't, I mean, they did win like that last year for the second half of last year, but I feel like you can't win like that.
All right, let's talk about the defense, because I think kind of going back to my earlier question, kind of what's the issue potentially with this team? I do think it's the defense, and I do think you're right to draw a connection between the defense and the way this team is being built in some ways, right? Because you made them the comparison to the Celtics. Like, this is a team from the outside that's doing it, quote unquote, the right way. You know what I mean? Like, they're building for the long term and the short term. They're trying to build internally. They're not going out and splurging on free agents. Those are all things I think we praise. Yes, but they can also cause problems. They really, in order to build things the right way, you need players to improve year to year. Right? Like, you can't have that Jason Tatum regression season, for example, to go back to the Celtics. You have, and every little piece you add has to be perfect. It actually is, in some ways, very delicate, you know, when you try to do things the right way. And I think with the Colts, they were sitting on like a bazillion, that's an approximation, dollars in cap space. So a lot of people thought they would go out and pick up, I don't know, like a elite pass rusher or a safety or something. And they didn't. I mean, they did add Justin Houston,
right,
Dominique, which I think, you know, it was a good signing, especially the value they got for him was great. He's obviously no longer 22 sacks Justin Houston, but he was still pretty good last year. I think he finished like 9 sacks off the top of my head. I don't have it in front of me. But and he said specifically he wanted to sign with the Colts because he wanted to play in a defensive end in a 4-3, right? And he didn't want I think, yeah, Houston has a 3-4. That's right. So he, yeah, he was standing up in Houston. So, or, pardon me, I said Houston. He's Houston. Yeah. That was in Kansas City. So, yeah, although he was often, you know, in their sub-packages, had his hand on the ground. But in any case, that was kind of their marquee signing of the offseason, and I think it was a bit of a letdown for a lot of people who thought, even though it is quote-unquote the right way to team build, but you can say that, and then I look at this secondary, and it makes me really nervous, okay? Like, I know, you know, Malik Hooker's good, Pierre Desir had a breakout season, they just re-signed Kenny Moore, who was an excellent slot corner, but there's a lot of holes. And I think to connect to your final point, they did draft Rakusin, who I like, the cornerback out of Temple. To connect your final point about why they play zone, I think it has a lot to do with Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator, sort of building that scheme around the talent they had, and they didn't change that talent. So you're spot on with everything you said, and I think they're all connected.
So, yeah, and you normally, you run a vanilla defense, like what they run, a lot of cover two and a lot of cover three, and occasionally they'll blitz. When I watched their film from the season, like I got the sense that they blitzed a lot, and then I looked at the numbers and they're pretty close to average amount of blitzing. And on third down, they are well below average in the amount of blitzing that they do. But you kind of do vanilla stuff like that when you have talent up front. You're like, all right, we're going to win with our front four and we're going to do vanilla in behind. And I don't know how they were able to get away with doing that last season. In part, maybe it was because their offense was so good, but you can't really get away with that because that puts a lot of pressure on your front to perform. And they didn't have that great of a pass rushing front and it hasn't gotten much better. And like back to the original point. And part of the reason why I miss working with you more and I wish we worked in the same office is because we can have these conversations and most people would just shout me down because I said something ridiculous, but you're willing to entertain it. The idea that this is, you can poke holes in this slow, methodical way, this quote unquote right way of building a team, because the juxtaposition to that is, the Rams. And there's so much, while you might imagine that there's a lot of variance in throwing a bunch of kind of free agents onto one team, you could argue that there's less variance because it's like, all right, we just got to make this work for 1 year. We need everybody to stay healthy for 1 year. We need everybody to get along for 1 year or for a couple of years. The idea that you need all of these things to continue to work well together, everyone to stay healthy and everyone to stay happy. And you're going to have to make some tough decisions, especially when you have as good a draft as they had last season. You're going to have to let some of these guys go eventually. You can't pay all these guys and that disrupts the locker room. There's something to be said for, I think it's fair to argue that them not going all in this offseason was a mistake.
Interesting. Yeah, they're betting on a lot of things to continue moving in the right direction. And that could happen, right? I mean, look, this offensive line obviously was the story of the season for them. I mean, Luck obviously coming back from that injury and returning to form was incredible. And that is the reason why they are the prohibitive favorite. But a big part of the reason why he was able to come back is this offensive line. Right. And the play calling, they obviously changed to a quicker passing game. His decision making improved, but you know, quarterbacks' decision making, their approaches is often contingent upon having that sort of protection. And this offensive line, the funny thing about it, Dominique, was it wasn't all put together at the beginning of the season. Okay. Costanzo, the left tackle, was out. They were experimenting with a few different lineups and then they settled into this like incredible unit that we saw kind of fall apart a little bit in that final playoff game. And you know what? I'm not really comfortable saying that. It wasn't their best performance. The right tackle, Braden Smith, I remember just got absolutely worked by T Ford in that game. But you know what? He was a rookie, right? So there are two rookies. And so you got to think that this offensive line is going to be even better this year. So in some
didn't they change offensive line coaches though?
Yeah, that was also weird to me. I'm sure there's a reason for that. I don't understand, but you're right. They did fire their offensive line coach and move on to someone else. Dave DiGuglielmo. I just think there's reason to believe that this offensive line, which was already incredible, could be even better this year, which is why I'm not particularly worried about this offense. I do wish, again, to speak to the free agency, I wish they had gone out. I thought they might draft or sign like a more exciting pass catching option for Luck, and they didn't. They signed Devin Funchess.
Yeah, but I mean, they got your boy Paris Campbell in the draft.
Love him.
Yeah, Funchess. Funchess is not. Campbell. They just signed him to a 1 year deal, right? Like, I don't know that. Yeah,
I feel
like
$13 million, I believe.
More of a insurance blanket. It doesn't seem like they're not invested in Devin Funchess for the long term. I don't imagine that they're going to try to create ways to get him the ball in the same way that they might for Nyheim Hines and Ebron and Mac. Those guys are the core that offense. Then you bring in Paris Campbell. He's going to blow the top off the defense, a big play threat all the time. Like I think they are definitely, I guess if I were to argue against their offseason, it's not that they didn't make aggressive moves on the side of the ball.
On the offense. Yeah, I agree. I loved the Campbell signing. He is one of my favorite wide receivers in the draft, and I think he's going to be just an incredible weapon in this offense. You know, an offense that at times leaned almost exclusively on T.Y. Hilton. They did, I thought they would re-sign Dontrell Inman, pardon me, because they added him mid-season last year, and I remember very specifically how much he kind of opened up things for Hilton and was really, really reliable with Luck, and obviously they didn't have to pay him very much, so I was kind of surprised they let him walk. But I, all things considered, I'm not worried about the offense at all. I mentioned Mac, you know, he's less of a, more of a three down back, not a pass catcher. But I, it's funny, there were rumors like about Le'Veon Bell going to this team, which I thought was weird because Marlon Mack's really, he was really good in this offense. Like, I think they are set on that side of the ball. I just worry about this defense. You know, I worry about kind of leaning on these young players to continue developing and really Justin Houston being the answer for them as a pass rush.
And I think they said quite openly that they felt like they ran out of gas last year, which is understandable. They started out, was it 1-4, and then just went on a crazy win streak. And they are known as a team that practices really hard, which everyone thinks is a positive thing until you're tired in the last game. So maybe that was part of the problem and maybe they'll adjust that. But I've been a little dismissive of Eberflus's defense because I kind of call it vanilla. They have done some things. I remember an interception that was caused in the playoff game against the Texans. They ran something called six match, which is essentially cover three, but it looks like cover one. So they motioned the back out of the backfield all the way to the number one spot. And Darius Leonard, linebacker, ran out there as if he were covering him number one, as he was covering him in man-to-man. They snapped the ball, and Darius Leonard played deep third from the cornerback spot. Deshaun Watson, assuming it was man-to-man, tried to throw like an option route to the slot, and the outside cornerback was playing the hook player. Picked it off. Like, that's something that I don't think I've ever seen, or I haven't noticed another defense do. So I'll give him some credit for that, but the rest of their stuff is kind of boring and vanilla. And I feel like, some good coaches, especially bringing in, offensive coordinator.
Sirianni.
DeFilippo.
Flip, yeah.
Who has, history with the Eagles and that offense. Yeah. Like, if you think that you're going to run cover two and cover three and get away with that against DeFilippo, like, I think you're in trouble.
Well, that feels like a good spot to transition to Flip's new team, Jacksonville. So I was critical of the Nick Foles signing because of the dollar figures. It made sense to me. It made sense all in the world. I think it was like the most predictable signing of the offseason, right? The second they went in that direction, everybody thought, oh, they brought in Flip. It's definitely Nick Foles, no question. I thought it was a bit of an overpay. That said, as I went through this roster, Dominique, I actually found myself a little bit more excited about the offense than I was before I went through the depth chart, because I was obviously thinking about the offense from last year. I was thinking about how terrible that offensive line was. Like, as bad as Bortles was, and he was bad, that offensive line was a shell of itself by the end of the season. Completely banked up injury-wise, right? There's no accounting, like, there's no telling that these guys will come back and excel. That Cam Robinson, who missed almost the entire season, left tackle. Norwell was out at times. Linder, the center, was out. They added Jawan Taylor in the draft. But there's no telling that all those guys will come back perfect. But they can't be worse, in my opinion. So there's that. The wide receivers, again, major injuries in this group. And there's a lot of question marks, but I actually think it's a little bit better as I went through it than I thought. And I think as I was going through the group and thinking about Flip and what he likes to do with Foles and what he's shown us he likes to do with Foles, I kind of found myself a little bit more optimistic about this offense than I was originally.
Okay, well, you're alone on that one. I mean, I'm not pessimistic, but maybe there is hope. I'm not a complete pessimist with this offense. There is some hope, but I am not high on Nick Foles. And I think that was an overpay. And I think, like, I guess you went through the roster after our text conversation because you really sold me on not having much hope in them when we were texting a few days ago, because the point you made is true, is that on the text was Foles is often very dependent on the weapons around him, and the weapons don't excite me. So I guess you can argue that him having DeFilippo in that system is also a part of the reason why he had success, and there's a reason there to get excited. Yeah. But if you're going to sell me on the Texans making a run, it's not because their offense is good. It's because their offense is mediocre, and them returning so many of their top defensive players and hoping that they can return. I mean, they weren't bad last year. People gave them a hard time because they weren't out of this world like they were 2 years ago, but they were fine last year. They're pretty good. Them being good this season is based almost entirely on their defense being dominant and their offense being serviceable, in my mind at least.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're right. It's the Jags. You accidentally said the Texans, which honestly is an honest mistake because Nick Foles does seem like a Texans quarterback. but listen, and I texted you that. Maybe I was just trying to confuse you before.
Yeah, you threw me off the scent.
Set you up to strike you down. No, I we'll talk about the defense in a second. I guess I do like the marriage of him and Flip. I was thinking about sort of, you know, what made Nick Foles excel in those Eagles offenses, and obviously very small sample size, basically the playoffs, and at times before last season, Flip was gone, obviously, and thinking about what they might run in Jacksonville, right? So, it's funny, like, it was a lot of short passes, he really uses the middle of the field, a ton of play action, a lot of passing to running backs, uses tight ends a lot. And those aren't things that I'm necessarily sure Jacksonville has the weaponry for, you know? They did add a second running, Alfred Blue, and because they lost Grant and Yeldon, who would have been great, I think, in that role. And Fournette's been saying, you know, I'm going to be used in the passing game, which I don't think we've ever seen. We certainly didn't see it in college, but I'm not sure if Fournette is really capable of that. We'll see, I guess. But I imagine, given the nature of those offenses, like D.D. Westbrook, the slot receiver, he'll be sort of a primary target for Foles. Right. You know, the other weapons. So they have Chris Conley, who I guess they played together. They were teammates back in Kansas City, right? And then Marquise Lee's coming back. D.J. Chark had kind of an up and down rookie season. I don't think he scored no touchdowns. So there's a lot of question marks on this side of the ball. You're perfectly within your rights to be sort of dubious. I just think the players around Foles will be better than last year. Not the Eagles, but what Jacksonville had last year. Right. So it's not like he's just walking
Foles
into that
better,
terrible.
Also.
And Foles is better. I mean, good. I think the amount of passive aggressive quotes coming from Jacksonville players talking about Nick Foles, but like subtweeting Blake Bortles. I highlighted one. Oh, this was Chris Conley. Everyone has opportunity because we have a quarterback thinking to get the ball there. I guess he wasn't on the team last year, but it feels like they are really hyping him up. I mean, well, let's talk about this defense then, because they're also obviously, they were responsible for a lot of the negative Bortles quotes that have come out over the last couple of years. You mentioned that they weren't as bad as people thought, which is true, Dominique. 6th in DVOA, 6th in pass, 7th in run, but people portrayed them as this like massively regressing unit, which isn't fair at all.
Yeah. And I mean, they were like, greatest of all time range 2 years ago. So they did regress some from that, but I think that that's to be expected for a team that kind of felt like they didn't have any hope. Like they went into that offseason after losing in the playoffs and, in a game that they probably should have won against the Patriots, if I remember, they probably should have won if Bortles could have made a couple plays in the second half that he was unable to make, and they were probably disappointed to come back to see things were the same, and they didn't make any real improvements at that position when there were available free agents. So I could understand why a team might have a defense, might have a hard time getting excited, but they still were top 10 in the league, just outside of the top 5, and those players have pride and care, and that front is still going to have Yannick Ngakoue, Campbell, Marcel Darius, and they're still going to have probably the best two corners or the best corner tandem in Boye and Ramsey on the outside, and Miles Jack at linebacker. Like they are stacked, and they are stacked in a way that is built for the modern NFL. We talked about playing man to man. Having a linebacker who's capable, who can run like Miles Jack and capable of playing man-to-man against linebackers, potentially even slot receivers in certain situations and running backs. Like that, means the world to your team, and you can only do that if you have a front that includes Calais Campbell and Marcell Dareus.
And Josh Allen and Bryan, who was their top pick last year, the defensive tackle. You know, this defensive line has a ton of depth, man. I mean, I thought Allen would have been I had figured him for a 3-4, right? And Jacksonville has a 4-3, and they're going to use him as a defensive end. They'll probably push Campbell in, I think, on pass rush downs, right? Don't you think? And have I think he does that. So it'll be interesting to see. It didn't feel like a perfect fit necessarily to me, especially given how good Josh Allen is at covering. I thought it would be sort of a waste. But maybe they'll do creative stuff, man, like use him on zone blitzes, drop him back. He's such a like all around weapon. I'm very excited to see how he's deployed in this very stacked defense in which they don't need him to produce a ton. Not having Telvin Smith hurts a little bit this year, but you're right. This defense is still fine. I guess who's safeties now? Cause Church is gone. Okay. So Ronnie Harrison, Jared Wilson. Ronnie Harrison was the Bama safety who, Nick Saban. Do you remember this? He was saying like, some guys aren't ready to go to the draft. I had a guy who like went in the fourth round or something. And Ronnie Harrison was like, dude, I know you're talking about me. I'm like, right. In any case, yeah, I don't have a lot of concerns about this Jaguars defense. And I do think it'll be a bit of a quote unquote bounce back year for them. But, you know, let's wrap the Jaguars. Let me ask you this. If Nick Foles is average, if he is the 15th best quarterback in the NFL, is this a playoff team?
Yep. I think, yes, I think so. I mean, I feel like the defense that courses through my veins, I have to say that that is the case. If you can have that much talent on defense, if your offense can not be a negative, which is what they were last year, essentially second to last in all, or last or second to last in almost every category, then if your defense can be mediocre, if your defense can be great and your offense can be mediocre, then yeah, you're a playoff team. And you can look at, I guess the Ravens are an example of that last year, where their defense was otherworldly and their offense was
at
unique,
times,
I guess.
Not good. Yeah.
Let me give you a random, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I wanted to ask you, like, as a defensive player, how dispiriting is it when your quarterback, like, I think there was that game where Blake Bortles fumbled it 300 times. Like, how, when you're, you know that meme, the S-H-I-T, here we go again meme?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Like, is that what it's like when you're on, like, when you're part of an elite defense with a bad quarterback?
It is very, very depressing, but I think it does depend on the personnel that you have and the attitude that you have. It's somewhat like empowering to come out there and know what you're dealing
with.
Because I remember, I remember in college we did that a lot, where we were like actually excited when turnovers happened. We're like, sudden change. We all yell and run out there and get excited. And I know in Baltimore, Ray and Ed were adamant they can't beat us if they don't score, and we need to score. Even when the offenses weren't as bad as they had been in the past, you get an interception, you pitch it, we must score because we can't count on anyone else to score. And I mean, that's a fun way to play the game, but it also, I think more often than not, it's like, what the bleep are
tiring.
We doing? Yeah, my shoulder hurts.
You're like, dude,
my neck
I just
hurts.
Got off the field.
Yeah, and you go three and
like out. Bortles just fumbled it again.
Yeah, we just gave you the ball at midfield and you go three and out. Yeah, it's
I just wanted some Gatorade.
It's depressing. All right, can I give you my random fact real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, so I came across some fun schedule articles, one by a guy at CBS Sports named John Breach. He shouted you out in there, which made me like him even more. Yeah.
Hopefully in a positive way.
Oh, yeah, of course it was positive. But anyway, the Jags, 0-9 in the Pacific time zone since 2005.
Woo!
Yeah. They have two games, I think, in the Pacific time zone this year, which, yeah, I think, that doesn't bode well for them.
Let's
good
see,
question.
Maybe they're bad teams, though. I pulled it up. Okay. No. This is great podcasting.
But they got the Raiders. They're going to the Raiders.
Yeah. Oh, Chargers. No, that's in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville. Yeah.
I only see the Raiders unless.
Okay. Well, maybe there was a mistake. Maybe. Oh, well, glad this isn't live.
No, keep it. They need to see our process. Well, if you're going to play a team in the Pacific time zone, I think the Raiders are a good one.
He actually just quoted one of your tweets Is that your proudest moment in Twitter history? What is your proudest moment in Twitter history? You are a great tweeter.
I don't know. I don't want, like, I quote my analysis, not my tweets, unless it's a really fire tweet.
No, it was just the poll of Jameis versus Mariota.
Oh, Mariota. Yeah, which, like, you saw that Mariota ran away with it. It was very odd. We'll talk about Mariota because he is in this division.
Not going to answer my question?
Not the player that Dominique Foxworth is profiling, though.
I don't care about football. I want to know about your proudest tweet. Is there somebody super
famous? My proudest tweet?
Somebody super famous who, like, liked or retweeted you or something? Is there, or was there just one that was really funny? So which one do you point to? I want to know about your Twitter accomplishments, the one thing that you put on your Twitter resume, the top line on your Twitter may.
I'll tell you the ones that I like. So I've done a few like about Tom Brady's outfits, like his pregame outfits, like walking into the Super Bowl. And I like those because other NFL players have liked them, which I just like the idea of other NFL players like low key kind of roasting Brady low, but they would never, you know, like retweet. But I do like the stuff likes there.
You're such a footballer. Cause I feel like you probably have like actors and like other people who like and share your stuff, but you're like random football player like my Tom Brady joke.
Josh McCown loves my Brady jokes. all right. Well, we're going to get to some of your questions, some of which are football related. But first, I want to take a quick second to tell you about BetterHelp. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, grief, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient. You can now get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. And if you are not happy with the counselor, you can request a new one at any time for no additional charge. Best of all, it's truly affordable option, and my listeners get 10% off your first month just by using the discount code Lenny. That's L-E-N-N-Y. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/Lenny. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you will love. betterhelp.com/Lenny.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Guys, as always, if you leave a question in my iTunes reviews, and it has to be a 5-star review. Someone recently left a question with a 3-star review. I was like, nope, nope, wasting your time. Anyways, we will answer it. And we are in June on these questions. So, you know, you will get an answer soon. We are caught up. We are fully caught up. And we got a good one. A bunch of good ones. Most of these are football ones. So CWetzel20 asks, has anyone been, I'm abbreviating a little bit, a better coordinator and worse head coach than Wade Phillips? And he mentions Norv Turner, Norvcore. We love Norvcore around here. Ray Rhodes, good example as well. Dominic, I've got one. Do you want to hear mine?
Yeah, give it to me. Of course.
So Wade, actually, at one point I thought I was doing a story on Wade Phillips, so I know a lot about Wade Phillips because when I do a story, I like read everything about the person and then the story didn't happen. So now I have all this random Wade Phillips knowledge. And I read about half of his book, Son of Bum. Highly recommend. Great book. So his head coaching record was 83-69, which is not bad at all. One who comes to mind, and this is, it's a little bit flawed because it's a very, very small sample size, is Josh McDaniels, who was 11-17 as a head coach in Denver. And I think is probably, it's really interesting. Like he's should be regarded as one of the most brilliant offensive minds in football history, honestly, because that's how we talk about people associated with the Brady Belichick era. But I don't feel like he is. I don't know. In Brady, Belichick's obviously a defensive guy. Like, don't you think, do you think Josh McDaniels is like a little bit left out of that conversation?
Well, it's hard for us to, he might be, but it's hard because they were great before him. You know, like we normally give people credit when they take a bad unit and make them good, or when they leave their unit that they left is terrible. Like it seems like they were good when Josh McDaniels went to Denver. And they were good before Josh McDaniels was the coordinator. So it's hard to divvy up credit pie in New England as it is. And he's certainly not going to be the one to get it given all the variables.
That's a good point. Is there anyone, I mean, I can think of some defensive guy. Is there anyone I'm leaving out?
I don't know. I don't respect coordinators.
It's amazing how much, like how often to when a guy becomes a head coach and then goes back to being, I've said I want someone to run the numbers with. I feel like when a guy is a head coach, fails or is fired or whatever, then goes back to being a coordinator, often he's like really good. That's unscientific. I don't know. I think I mentioned the example I mentioned was I didn't realize that Leslie Frazier was the coordinator in Buffalo, and like he's just kind of quietly took that job and the defense has been really good and I just didn't even notice. And then I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Right. Of course.
He's North very good. Turner comes to mind, but I guess he wasn't a bad head coach, but I just got a lot of respect for Norv last season because I thought Norv was an old man who couldn't modify his game, but he modified it, him and the rest of his family who took over the coaching staff. But
head coaching record is 114, 122, and 1. So not great.
Yeah, not great. And he's had a lot of success at a lot of different places, playing many different styles. I like him. We're going Norv Turner for my pick.
So Evan Lucky 13 asks, why can't the Texans get over the hump and go deeper into the playoffs? Is it the head coach? Is it the players? Well, we're going to talk about the Texans in depth. And it's interesting because I kind of think as I was going through the Texans and thinking through the playoff record, Dominique, it occurred to me, like, I think if they don't win a playoff game this year, I can't imagine Bill O'Brien survives the season. Do you think that's like premature? I mean, we'll talk about this team in depth, but.
Yeah,
obviously the franchise is in total disarray too as well.
Yeah. I mean, they've changed everything else around him. And I mean, Deshaun Watson saved his job once, so it'll be incumbent on Deshaun Watson. But yeah, we'll talk about that when we get there. But I certainly agree with you. When I was looking at this, I had the same thought. Is it seems like the order of hot seat in this division is Bill O'Brien top, then Doug Marrone, and obviously the Titans with Mike Vrabel and then Frank Reich is pretty safe, I would think, for the next couple of years.
Me, $8733, that better not spell like boobs or something, asks, does Lenny have a Thunder shirt? Oh, do you know what Thunder shirts are?
No.
So like dogs get afraid.
Oh,
of...
so it like hugs them so they don't get scared when it's like thunder and lightning?
Yes. I also saw on the internet there's like a Thunder shirt that has like an aromatherapy aspect, like releases a calming scent. So fun fact about Lenny, he could care less about thunder and lightning. And like July 4th is coming up. I love that you know that. Fireworks do not bother him. Yet a postman could cross the street 3 miles away and his ears will perk up. I could drop a Cheerio 4 football fields away and he'll come sprinting at me. So his sound sensitivity is very selective. I guess we can see. But, it's like he's very logical. He's like, thunder won't hurt me, but I could eat this Cheerio.
Yeah, Lenny's seen things. Lenny's been around. Lenny's not going to be intimidated by a little bit of loud sound, but he will run to a Cheerio.
Nameless One. Oh, this is a good one for you. It's a good one for both of us because we wrote an article about him. Can Lamar Jackson be a top 10 quarterback? And how would you build a scheme to maximize long-term success? I mean, this is like a whole, we could do an entire podcast.
This is a whole show, yeah.
I'll say yes to the first answer. I'll just straight up.
I certainly think yes to the first answer. And I mean, I don't think that you can build a scheme for long-term success for Lamar Jackson, like in quarterback years. I think it's on a different scale. Like, I think Lamar Jackson's best assets are things that will atrophy sooner than the best assets of like what we consider to be a traditional quarterback. So I don't think Lamar Jackson is your 16 to 18 year starter. I think Lamar Jackson could give you 8 to 10 good years on the high end, and you should really appreciate that.
I think also, I mean, when we talk about the Ravens on this podcast, I think we do the AFC North pretty soon, a couple weeks, but we'll talk about like the weapons they added and what that might signify for their sort of, you know, they're changing their offense a little bit, under Romans. But I do think, just to kind of answer this question briefly, Lamar Jackson has to develop. If he's the quarterback he was last season, no, he's never going to be a top 10 quarterback. He's not going to have a long-term success, but quarterbacks do develop all the time and evolve and change and get better at things. So I think this is going to be a crucial year for him, just not only in terms of like what the team builds around him, Dominique, but in the throws that he becomes capable of making, the way he plays football. So it's going to be really fascinating.
I know we're not supposed to spend a ton of time on these questions, but I think it's a lot more on Lamar Jackson than it is on anyone else, because I like what they did for him last year, and the issues that I saw with that team was not him, his inability to read defenses. It wasn't their inability to maximize his best skills. It was his inability to put the ball where he wants it to go. So like, he should spend all his time improving his footwork or mechanics, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Whatever it is to get your accuracy right, because I think he can certainly be a top 10 quarterback if he can just connect. And they're not even tough passes sometimes. It's like, connect on those short ones.
And it's frustrating because he does make them sometimes too. Like, I remember at the playoff game, he was like, oh. And then in the last quarter, you were like, you can do this. Like,
because his ability to run makes so many of his passes so much easier. And it makes
sense.
And they build it in a way that seems like they're very smart. They're like, all right, we're going to scare you with this, which is going to open up that Lamar throw this 12-yard pass and he'll hit it one time, then he'll miss it twice. And like, oh, we can't
save
win
this
like that.
Sound. For when people tell us we're in the tank for Lamar, by the way, because you and I just put it on him and his accuracy. So please. And there's nothing more on brand for this podcast than us being derailed into a 5-minute Lamar Jackson conversation. Last question.
We love Lamar.
Ooh, this one's for me. Tashima Taylor asks, if you were on a desert island, who would you pick to survive, Dominique or Gojo? Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I'll forgive you.
More meat on Gojo. this is tough. There's a lot of like strategic elements, both great friends, great podcast hosts, wonderful human beings.
Yeah. Cause you need a podcast while you're on the desert island. Gojo might be a better defender. He's bigger, but I mean, I'm nastier.
Okay.
So.
And I know Gojo listens to this, so this is tough. Gojo, I think, would be less likely to make me upset at some point. But you would be more likely to get us off the island. So I'm going to go with you.
I'll take it. I feel like if Gojo was on right now, you would have made some way to give it to him. But I don't care.
Yes,
I'll take it.
100%. Okay. Well, speaking of survival or players that have yet to survive a season, let's talk about Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans. 22nd in offense last year, 19th in defense. So thoroughly below average, although, narrowly missed the playoffs. And I guess it all starts with the quarterback, so we should probably start there. That was a very enthusiastic introduction to the Titans.
Yeah, let's speed through this Titans talk. Because you don't, even though you're missed Titan up, you have no enthusiasm for this roster.
It's less about that and more that I've talked about Mariota so much on this podcast. Okay. I mentioned, we talked about the poll earlier. I've talked about him a lot. I've talked about how we don't really know who he is, because of the injuries, because of the turnover, because of the bad weapons. I will say, let's start an optimistic note. He has much better weapons this year, right? So there is some reason to believe, like they added, Adam Humphries, very consistent slot weapon, and then AJ Brown, who I think you liked a lot, right? Coming out of the draft.
I like AJ Brown, and Adam Humphries is such a slot receiver. He is so slot in his receiver ring.
In every sense of the word.
I do love AJ Brown. And, I mean, I don't know about Corey Davis to be completely honest. No. It's not, I don't know. Yeah. It's not, I don't know because like he hasn't had a chance. It's, I don't know because I haven't really watched enough to know, to be frank with you. So he's still young. So there could be hope. And Delanie Walker, who is not young, he still is a contributor. And so does it feel to you like stock is up on Derrick Henry and it was all because of one game? Is that something that's real or did I make that up?
There was a question. I did a mailbag pod with the aforementioned meteor, Mike Golic Jr. And somebody asked about Derrick Henry. And I remember I pulled up just kind of like his usage and his statistics were really impressive because, let's see. I think I have them here. Yeah. So he ranked high in both DVOA and success rate. And success rate, Dominique, accounts for, you know, like it's not just like one big run, right? So, I'm very high on him, and also ranked very high. Well, yards after contact will be distorted by that single run, but, I do think he is excellent. And yeah, I don't know. This offensive line is really good too. They addressed the interior. Yeah. They got rid of, who did they let walk? Well, they added Saffold and, Josh Klein and Quentin Spain, they let walked. And they drafted that, Nate Davis in the third round. So the tackles position's fine. So it's one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. Wide receivers looking good. They've got Derrick Henry. Like, not a lot of excuses for Marcus Mariota in terms of the players around him.
Yeah, I think that I'm out. I mean, you know, I'm out on Winston. I'm rooting for Winston to get it figured out, but I'm out on Winston and I'm kind of out on Mariota also. Like, I don't know. I kind of feel like we are looking for ways to say that maybe he's great when really he's just inconsistent. Like, I know he's been injured and I know he's had a lot of offensive coordinator turnover, but I also feel like I don't want him. I don't want him to be my quarterback. You know, like I don't. I understand that he's better than bad. He's better than bad, but I guess it depends on the price too, because he's in the fifth year of his deal. I would rather stick with Tannehill on a lower rate, assuming he would go lower than go with Mariota.
Interesting.
At some Mariota sort of big finishes, extension.
If Mario, so this is the decision year for both guys, but talking about Mariota here. If Mariota finishes, like 10 to 15 range in all statistical categories, do you extend him?
I mean, it depends on what he wants, but I mean, I would lean
the enthusiasm.
Towards, yeah, I would lean towards no. I'd lean towards no because
really?
normally when you extend a guy, you extend him as your franchise quarterback and you pay him franchise quarterback money. And I think that I feel like you can get, Mariota's production elsewhere. So I would say, no, at the wrong price, but yes, at the middle of the pack price, which is not something that I think he would take because I think so many other teams are thirsting for a quarterback that they would overpay just for some hope. And I don't know.
Well, the other side of the ball, I think, is a little more exciting. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's do
that. They did draft their first pick. You know, Jeffrey Simmons is not going to play this year. He's going to have a red shirt. So they kind of went for talent there. You know, they don't need him immediately. But, and I see why. When you look at the front seven, it's quite good, I think. You know, especially, they did add, Cameron Wake as a pass rusher opposite Harold Landry, I suppose. But the whole linebacker group is really great. I mean, Wesley Woodyard, who's what, like 45 years old now? I always say that. He's probably like 28. Let me look it up. And then,
he's been around for a while. We were on the same team for, a stretch.
Well, there you
I think
go.
He was like a rookie.
32.
So that tells you he's pretty old, yeah.
And then Jalen Brown, who was awesome. Jalen, pardon me, Brown, who was awesome last year. And then the secondary, Dominique.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about it because the depth chart, just on paper, it's very, very good. But they had a lot of guys who kind of underperformed. Not a lot of guys. I'm talking about, I think, Butler specifically.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Jackson was kind of up and down too, I'll say.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he underperformed. At least from my, my assessment of Adoree Jackson coming out was that's who he was. Like, I don't think he underperformed. He did what I expected Adoree Jackson to do. But I do think that back to this man coverage thing. And if it's something that I don't know, and maybe I'm not smart enough to figure out a different way to play defense in the modern NFL, but I believe you need to be a good man coverage team to win. You need to at least have that capability to win in this league at this point. And I think that they have that capability. And they
You do.
I do. I think that they do have that capability. And no one is going to just be locked down all the time except for the Jags. But I think that I like their ability to cover. And I think Butler didn't have a great season last year, but I don't think that's because he's not good. Like, he played a lot of man coverage and
I was going to say, yeah, they got two former Patriots, Butler and Logan Ryan.
And Logan, yeah.
And those guys, the Patriots play a ton of man, yeah.
Yeah, and those guys are capable of doing that, and this is another one of the many attempts at recreating the Patriots elsewhere with Vrabel as the head coach. But I do think that I like their ability in the secondary. And so, yeah, that makes me excited about their defense in this NFL.
And two very good safeties in Kevin Bayer and Kenny Vaccaro.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
Kenny Vaccaro, very good, but.
Well, I mean, he's above average.
Yeah.
I think that flexibility is something that I like, and putting Vaccaro in the box, replacing a linebacker is something that they did, some last year, which is, I think, also the wave of the future is, kind of that rover position, hybrid safety linebacker is something that you're going to need to do and have corners that can cover at all times. I think they have that. If it's going to pan out, I don't know because there's so many other variables, but I think that is one of the more important starting points to having a good, reliable defense that can take your team into the playoffs.
I want to wrap this up by asking the same question about the Titans that I asked about the Jags, which is if Marcus Mariota is an average quarterback, does this team make it to the playoffs?
So they both can't because we're going to assume that the Colts get in and I don't, this division is not good enough for three. I'd say no because I think the Jags defense is a cut above. So if we get the same offensive production, I think the Jags would, get that wild card spot before the Titans do, right? Am I right?
No, I agree. No, I agree. I think, because what you're really asking is like, how good is this defense? And I think they're good. I do.
Andrew Luck has never lost to the Titans. 11-0.
Really? Jeez.
Fun fact.
I did not know that. By the way, you were talking about Adoree Jackson. Yes, he was up and down, but man, he got destroyed by the Colts. I don't know if you remember that game. It was like T.Y. Hilton put up like 500 yards against him. Love T.Y. Hilton. That was a sad, sad performance. Well, so the final team, I think, is the team that could be like incredible or terrible.
Seahawks South. like that?
Interesting.
Seahawks South?
What? Tell me why. Why are they the Seahawks South?
Well, because they don't believe in quality offensive line play. They want a quarterback to save their offense in general, and they are a defensive-oriented team. So I guess the Seahawks have moved away from that, but they are the Seahawks. They got a lot of, or they are what the Seahawks used to want to be, or what the Seahawks used to be. That's who they are. And then they went and got the Seahawks quarterback coach, right? He came down to do the same thing, to teach an athletic quarterback how to survive when no one wants to protect for him. So, yeah, there we go. Seahawks South.
The Texans offensive line makes the Seahawks offensive line look like a wall, like a brick wall. In part because the Seahawks stole the Texans left tackle, Dwayne Brown. Well, let's start there because this is the obvious glaring weakness on this team, right, is the offensive line. It was last season. We've spoken at length about Deshaun Watson, not being able to fly on airplanes as a result. And so they did go out and they added a couple tackles in the draft, Titus Howard and Max Sharping in the first two rounds, drew mixed reviews from people who know about college offensive line play, like.
Which is not us.
I don't know that, but I do know they got jumped by the Eagles for Andre Diller. I think everyone saw that happen. We were together actually that night and we were like, oh, that sucks. So the offensive line was extremely ugly last year and, you know, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, if either of those two tackles crack the starting lineup. One would hope, I suppose. Howard played both left and right tackle. Julian Davenport was very, very, very bad. Also led the team in penalties and sacks. So that's great. They did sign Matt Khalil, by the way. And when you're saying they did sign Matt Khalil as the positive sentence in a section about an offensive line, you know you're not in a good place.
Yeah, it's hard for me to have much confidence. They do have – so the encouraging thing is they'll get back their receivers, and they have a lot of explosive, fast receivers. So maybe you would hope that having all those threats on the outside would – and having a quarterback who can buy time and a la Russell Wilson, that they could create big plays, and that would take – pressure off of that offensive line, and maybe they'd be less likely to blitz because they don't want to leave those guys isolated with no help. And maybe because those guys were hurt last year, Fuller and Cutie were out last year for most of the season, and they just had Hopkins. And so putting those guys back in, I do think, should take some pressure off of the offensive line and allow Watson some quicker throws and allow those guys to make some plays. So that is encouraging for their offense as a whole, but still, you're going to have to block some people sometimes. On third and eight, you're going to have to be able to drop back and sit in the pocket and protect your quarterback. And I don't know that they can do that consistently.
Yeah, Will Fuller going out and was halfway through the season. as I recall, that I think people underestimated. He's really, really good. I think sometimes he gets pigeonholed as just this deep target for Deshaun Watson, but he's actually, every time I say Deshaun Watson's name, I've been saying it. I just said Deshaun Watson. I guess it was deep passes. I was thinking about Jackson, but in any case, he is excellent and their connection is really, really good. So getting him back and QD's been in and out. It was a little bit in and out with injuries last year, but him in the slot, it's a great wide receiver group if they're all healthy. So he does have that going for him. I think it's funny. Watson a little bit because the season ended so poorly. You talked about that Colts game, right? When he was like basically only throwing to Hopkins and, the Colts defense kind of had his number. You mentioned, I think it was like one of their disguised coverages, but they were just they were just destroying him all game, and his decision-making was really, he did not look like himself too. He was missing routine throws. I'm talking about Watson. He was missing routine throws. But you set that aside. He had an excellent season, especially coming back from a torn ACL. He was incredible last year. And some of the sacks do fall on him, but I was thinking about last season, Dominique, and how frustrated at times I was with Bill O'Brien's play calling, which I often felt was overly conservative. I remember thinking a lot last year that he was calling the offense like they had a good run game and a good defense. And they did have a good defense, but they did not have a good run game. And I think it was like a lot of Seahawks-y, like runny pass type stuff, right?
Yep.
A lot of field goals. So I'm very curious. And again, you know, with the wide receivers back, that should change things. But this offense, even despite the offensive line, does have the potential to be pretty explosive. And the defense still should be good, even though we have no idea what the heck is going on with Jadeveon Clowney. Is he going to be, is he holding out? Like, what's the situation? Why don't they just pay him? They have the money.
Yeah. I mean, clearly they don't want him there long term, right? Because they have the money and he is impactful enough and deserves to get paid. For some reason, they don't want to commit to him. I don't know why they don't pay him, because I do think he deserves it.
I guess he wants to get paid more than the other, you know, Ware and the other big pass rushers. I mean, the thing with him is that his run defense has been much more impressive than his pass rushing, but I've often maintained that's just how they use him in a lot of ways. I do think he's not one of the four or five best pass rushers in the NFL, but he's probably in the top 10. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I mean, he's not just a pass rusher. Like, he's...
Right.
And I think his versatility and being able to move around the defense, and he's athletic enough to cover. So I think you're right. He's not like the elite of elite pass rushers, but I do think that he is very important to the defense. And I guess I don't know what he's asking for, but I think he is deserving of an extension that puts him amongst the top outside linebacker or edge players in the league.
So just to kind of complete the defense, they did lose Kareem Jackson and Tyrann Mathieu. They did add Bradley Roby, who was kind of a bad last year in Denver, to be honest, but has been very good at times. And then Tashaun Gibson, former Jags safety. So there's reinforcements. They drafted Lonnie Johnson out of Kentucky as well, the cornerback. We'll see if he gets starting time. I mean, but they're counting on guys kind of coming back. Like, I don't know if you remember, they added Aaron Colvin, who was really bad last year, but has been really good in the past. Same with Roby. So I guess this is kind of like, okay, well, we've got these guys who have been good at points in the secondary. And I don't know. I'm not too worried. Like, that's a fair amount of talent. And I like Mathieu. But I don't think it's like a massive, massive loss.
Yeah. I don't like this team though. I mean, overall,
really?
I don't have much faith in the coaching staff. I don't have much faith in the offensive line. And those are big problems, especially considering the fact, again, I'm hitting you with some more schedule talk, but they have to go to New Orleans, which is probably going to be a loss at the beginning of the season. They are 1-10 against the Patriots, which they have to play them, and not everyone in the division has to play them. They have to go to Baltimore, and then 4 days later, they have to play the Colts. And then after that is when the Patriots game comes. Like, I think that matters. And
yeah, it's not good.
Those are a bunch of losses that I'm just going to go ahead and chalk them up. And I don't know if they can find the wins elsewhere. And I think the ambient fear that is probably in that organization, because Bill O'Brien's on the hot seat, like, a bad start, And that, and things could unravel quickly.
Completely. And to kind of go back to the first question of, you know, what's it going to take for this team to go deep in the playoffs? Aside from the Seahawks, it's very hard in the, what we've seen in recent years to go deep when you don't have a good offensive line. I mean, I'm looking at the teams who made it deep into the postseason last year. Obviously the Rams and the Patriots, incredible lines, the Chiefs, the Colts, the Cowboys, you know, the Eagles, like it's just
all
the Saints,
line.
Like these are the best offensive lines in the NFL. The Seahawks were, have been the exception, I think, not the rule when it comes to that. So that's certainly fair. All right. Dominique, I've got questions for you. But first, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. It's Mina still, Lenny. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Oh, that's crazy. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. 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 ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Dinks and Dunks are brought to you by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Dominique, first question, World Cup related. Have you been watching?
Absolutely.
So you saw Megan Rapinoe scoring twice and sort of doing that gladiator, are you not entertained?
I loved it. Yeah, I've been watching on DVR mostly because sometimes my daughter has camp and I want to watch it with her. She's getting into soccer, so I've been watching on DVR and I've been enjoying them.
So there's been some controversy over USWNT celebrating too much. I'm pretty sure I know you fall on that side of things, but I want to ask you, because soccer celebrations to me are different from football celebrations, right? And the Are You Not Entertained celebration was great because she was in the opposing country's stadium. So it was like kind of playing to the crowd, like, you know, the villain thing. What would you do if you were a soccer player and you scored in the country against the country? Like, what would your celebration be?
I feel like it has to be culturally specific. Like, you have to show some awareness where you are. Yeah, I mean, it can't be disrespectful. But culturally specific, like, otherwise, then does it matter? Then the question doesn't matter. It would be like, what would you do when you celebrate a goal? If you ask what you're going to do in an away goal, then.
Okay, so they're playing England today. We're recording this before the game. And if you were in England, you scored. You were born in England. Right?
I was. Yes.
Yeah.
How? I don't know. We have to figure out a way to reference American independence. Like, I feel like you have to take a shot.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only way to go, right? I don't know. Or how we saved them in World War II. Like, that's it? Something like that?
See, this is where you gotta be careful, I think, with the historical stuff. You gotta go way back. I think the War of 1812 is safe, maybe, but not World War II is a little too recent.
You can't pull up your shirt and show a Brexit shirt. That won't go over well.
Okay. Second question is a football one. So right now they're kind of figuring out the pass interference stuff, which I'm sure you're horrified by. So I think the latest is that it's challengeable, and then in the last 2 minutes, it's reviewable by the refs. Right. That's what we're hearing, but, you know, it's fine. One potential thorn is the Hail Mary, okay?
Oh, yeah, which pass interference is, like, it happens all the time.
Right. I want to ask you, take off your DB hat, put on your football, your unbiased football analyst hat. How do you handle Hail Marys now?
Yeah, I think it's on the field. You make the call, it's on the field, and you stick with that. But I think there is, when the quarterback's out of the pocket, which he normally is for Hail Marys, the rules change a bit. So you can then push receivers as long as the ball's not in the air and that sort of stuff. So that changes it some. But when the ball's in the air, there's going to be some jockeying. I think you have to the only reason or the benefit of having people and not machines is that they can use judgment and you have to be able to use those, that judgment in those situations. And I'm not against them adding this because I am generally in favor of getting things right, but I think this is dangerous and it's tricky. Though it annoys me that they continue to make the defense, make life harder and harder for the defense without paying the defensive players any more money. That's bothersome. But, while the offensive players, their stats go up and they seem to be more impactful on the game.
Okay.
Because
okay. We didn't need the whole like defense.
Sorry, but I do as a fan and as an analyst, I like the idea of getting it right, but I do think that this is something that is more knee-jerk than NFL is used to, and it could go terribly wrong.
I would also like to propose a rule that if a head coach challenges on a Hail Mary, the ref should be allowed to give him a wedgie. What do you think? Straight up, I mean, wedgie. There's this, write it into the rule book.
I'm in favor of wedgies. I don't care what the reason is, but if we can get some head coaches with catching them wedgies, I'm in favor.
Can't you just imagine like Doug Marrone throwing up the challenge flag on a Hail Mary? And
who is the most wedgieable coach? Like who would you like to see wedged the most?
Wedgieable. Okay, that's new question three. Because I want to talk about this in depth. Who's the most likely for this scenario to happen to in Mina Kimes' new wedgie regime.
So it's got
to
be glasses, right? Don't you associate getting wedgied with like the stereotypes of nerds? So what coaches wear glasses?
How dare you? I'm wearing glasses right now.
Okay, so we know which one of us is more wedgie.
Well, so there's a few things at play here because it's also like who's likely to challenge a Hail Mary.
Okay.
I feel like John Harbaugh would definitely challenge
him. He's a little brother too. He's a little brother too, which is very wedgeable.
Yes. Don't you think he would challenge a Hail Mary too? Remember, he was complaining about like the Patriots. Like,
oh yeah, and I mean, the coach who everyone is upset about because at the end of a game situation, he coached the team to hold. He's the guy. Him, Frank Reich falls in this category. Like, those are the type of guys who I feel like are not interested in the spirit of the game as much as they're interested in finding as much advantage as possible. I'd love to see Matt Patricia catch a mean wedge. I don't know why. I'm just looking at pictures of coaches.
A tall order. Yeah. I could see Adam Gase challenging a Hail Mary as well. That just feels like something.
I don't care about challenging Hail Marys now. I'm just trying to imagine who's
wedgie. No, but it's like I'm painting a picture. Yeah, I think John Harbaugh is the right answer for all of this.
Adam Gase, those eyes, right. How he would react. Do you catch a wedgie? Them wild eyes. I'm sorry. Next question.
Question four. It's grilling season. July 4th is just around the corner. I want to ask you this because I was actually having this conversation with someone. What is a food that doesn't taste better grilled? And not like a process, like a chip or something, but like,
obviously I'm trying to think of a meat that I would rather have.
Or even like not all on the grill. Cheese tastes really good grilled. All vegetables taste really good.
Hold on.
Grilled.
So you just throw naked cheese on the grill? Hold on. Excuse me. Roll it back.
Yeah.
You said cheese
really
tastes
good.
You just put naked cheese on the grill?
Yeah.
What?
Like a grilled halloumi. Did you say naked cheese or mac and cheese?
Naked cheese.
Okay. So like a grilled halloumi or feta, Dominique, is delicious.
Man. This is the whitest you've ever sounded.
What are you talking about?
That's like, I don't even know what those kind of cheeses are. A grilled what?
I worked
what?
At a Middle Eastern restaurant in college. Yeah. That's not white. It's like a Middle Eastern thing.
Okay. So
I'm giving
it's not
you
white.
An assignment.
I just assume
I'm giving
cheeses,
you an assignment though.
Assorted cheeses feels like a white thing to me, like a cheese tray.
I want you. Yeah, that's true. But I want you to go to a grocery store, buy a halloumi cheese.
Okay.
They'll have it. I'm sure you shop at fancy grocery stores, don't you? Throw it on
don't
the grill.
Try to turn it on me.
Throw it on the grill.
Will do.
And thank me later. Thank me later.
I will do. I'm going to be interested to hear the social media response to this because I don't know that I've never been to a cookout that it was like, ooh, burgers, hot dogs, steak, ribs, and some halloumi on that grill. Like that's never been something I've experienced
cookouts.
In my life. Clearly, I have.
Show up on. You should do this. Surprise! Just like it's going to be a massive hit for you.
I will. As soon as September comes on, I'm gonna pull that halloumi out and put it on the cookout grill.
Last question is always from Lenny. Lenny actually sought out, because it's so hard at this point to think of questions for you because you've been on this podcast so many times. He outsourced it. It got a little bit of help.
Uh-oh.
Dominic! I texted my grandfather, Peter Kimes, avid listener of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. He said that I asked him who his favorite host was. He said, it used to be you, but you've been surpassed by Mike Golic Jr. How does that make you feel?
Oh.
It's a real thing that happened.
Did that really happen?
Well, Lenny didn't write the text, but people
obviously,
did say that, yeah.
Wow. Now, this is the last show.
I told
show,
Mike
the,
he was thrilled.
The last question is normally meant to be funny, and like we leave on a good note, upbeat. Like, I'm seriously hurt. Like, I've long since had beef with your mother. Like, her and I, we don't get along. That's fine. I accept that.
She loves you. She's listening.
She hates me.
She loves you.
She hated me from day one. I remember.
My dad calls you Dominic, and I've corrected him like 3,000 times.
That's fine. Lots of people do. But I mean, he doesn't like me, and that crushes me because I thought he was the guy. I mean, Chief Ike is obviously a Clinton Yates fan. And I thought that I had dad, and this is, like, it's not funny. It's not fun. The last question is supposed to be upbeat. I'm right now I'm demoralized.
Say something to win him back.
I'm not even going to break out the Korean that I've been working on because I'm insulted.